I think certainly it is, it's a very useful thing to investigate, but while we're investigating the experience of the body, experience the tension without commenting on it, but just intuitively feeling it and acknowledging that, ah, there's tension, there's a whole area there that might be numb, might not be something that one wants to even feel, or is painful, but we have a way of holding it so that we ignore it. And to ignore is to be ignorant of. So just the fact that we were able to discover that area of hurt is valuable, and we can keep returning to that in our practice again and again and touching it with true attention, which is kind of what a nurse does to a patient in hospital. When there's a wound, she may come or he may come and dress the wound and give it disinfectant or, sorry, I mean, I don't know, you know, like antibiotic or a dressing in some way that helps the wound to heal. But not analyzing it, oh, how did this wound get there? And how long will it take? You just keep doing it and not expecting anything or wishing it wasn't there or blaming some situation or even necessarily making the connection. But then after the dressing is applied and you finish the meditation, then you can ruminate. Isn't that interesting? There's that tightness in the abdomen, in the throat, in the temples, in digestive system. I remember many years ago I was practicing in New Zealand and I had a lot of digestive issues, and a friend of mine said, I'd like to take you to a healer and he'll be able to help you heal this digestive. And I didn't, you know, I was trying to meditate on it and I was aware of it, but we love a fast fix. So let some healer do something to my body and get rid of it. And the healer ended up being quite psychic and told me something about my past life and how that whole problem got there. And it's funny, you know, I thought he was going to take the problem away. Instead, he explained to me the root of the problem. And that was actually very helpful because it no longer was my problem. It became very impersonal. And as you said, I understood the cause of it. And then I just got interested in being with it and healing it, because I wasn't stuck on thinking there was something wrong with me. But, you know, I don't think that it's necessary for us to do that if we just reflect on the fact that the law of karma has a lot to do with the suffering that we experience now, because much of it is due to causes and conditions, either in this life or in previous lives. For those of you that don't subscribe to that, it doesn't matter. Even in this life, many of the things that we've had to experience, you know, you've had a car accident and you broke your neck. You're going to have neck pain. If you survive, you have a lot of neck pain and a lot of fear of cars, driving in cars. I mean, these are causes that lead to conditions, but the meditation cannot change the causes and conditions, but the meditation can bring us the possibility to experience the pain that we might be in denial about and be with the body in its all its twistedness and trauma and distortion and holding and contraction, through fear, through the anger that we've had to experience, or the rejection, or the hunger, or the flames of other people's insults and irritations and passions being out of control. We have to experience those things again through not welcoming, but touching those pains with love and with attention. Just like the nurse touches the patient's wound with medicine over and over again. This mindful, present, loving, wise attention knows its pain and doesn't judge it, doesn't withdraw from it, but just keeps focusing. So if you're focusing on the breath and you can breathe into the whole body, some areas might be shut down, but our ability to breathe more freely helps us to open up to the whole experience of what we're carrying, what we have been carrying, and to put it down little by little. We can't put it down at once. We can't put it down just by thinking about it. It doesn't work. We've been thinking about it forever, and then we have opinions and ideas, but we have to take the medicine. That means we have to swallow it and experience it and let it be digested and processed through our liver and etc. And meditation, I think, comes from the same root as medicine. I might be making this up. But it's medicinal. And it's because we're practicing the middle way. We're able to balance and stand in the middle of our experience. That means not thinking takes us to the extremities of experience, not to the middle, because it takes us away from our direct experience. It's analytical, it's conceptual, it's not based in the embodiment of what we're holding. And what we hold is in the heart, not in the brain. Yeah, it's either I'm drooping or the mic is drooping.
Put it up like this, and then you can turn it over if you want to.
Thank you. Oh, that feels nice. So, and then we make adjustments. Taller.
Aya?
Yes.
You talked, you used a phrase something about the body of the breath contained in our physical body.
Yes.
And breathing into the whole body.
Yes.
Sometimes one might hear instructions, well, focus or on one place.
Yes.
And then another instruction would be to.
Okay, I think, thank you so much. That let me clarify. You know, it's like a vitamin pill. It's kind of loaded with all kinds of things, and then you have the possibility, a multivitamin has them all packed together, and I think what I did in this little guided meditation was offer a multivitamin, but there's other way of offering it where it's the A's, the B's, the C's, the D's, the E's, etc. And so, and the K, very important one I just learned about. So we, just like with the sitting cloth, you put it down on the chair and it's an invitation to sit down. And you sit down and you prepare yourself and you land. You have to land the body before you can offer the mind a place to land. So it's the same way with the breath. We start in one point, and that point is offering the mind a place to focus. And if you don't focus your camera on one point, you get a fuzzy picture. So when the mind learns how to focus on the breath, it learns how to clarify and make clear the experience, make the vision or the sensation of the present moment experience very clear, clarified. And then we start to massage it and work with it. And the mind gets more comfortable doing that, so it starts to be able to take in another vitamin and another until it can expand the experience of the breath, because the mind is not limited to focusing on one point. It's like, what does the eye of a dragonfly see? It sees the whole world. It's such a tiny, tiny, it comes from a tiny point. That little optic mechanism is so small, but it sees in vast ways with the eye of a bird. So the eye of our attention begins to see in that one point of clarity, and then we open it little by little and experience the whole body. But that's a suggestion of what we can be doing once we can swallow all the vitamins together. But we have to really start at one point and then gather the other elements of our experience into that, and let our concentration, by converging on one point, all facets of our faculties begin to converge into that one point, and the power of our attention grows. The mind, like we're sitting in this room, but if you close your eyes and imagine, don't use the word think, imagine or picture or feel someone that you love present in the room, and what happens? You feel them, they're like here. They come, they arrive. And if when we do metta practice, we direct our loving kindness eventually, after practicing on one person at a time, we then spread the metta in all directions. And that love, that loving feeling, has the possibility to grow and permeate and radiate outward and grow very powerful. So our attention within, we can have such a vast consciousness that we can even experience outer space, certainly space beyond the body. But we start working from this one area, one point in the body, and then as the power of our concentration grows, we extend it and expand it. Well, let's just relax with it. If there's an aversion to it, then work with the feeling around the experience. Just experience it and try to, if the mind is not suffering with it, then it may change. But if we try to force it, we may somehow violate the natural movement that the body is, something may be unwinding from within you, because this is a powerful medicine. And observe it and see if it's not disturbing the stillness in your mind, then I would just say carry on. If you'd like to do it without the exclusive kind of samatha tranquilizing practice, then you can investigate that movement in the body and just notice if it disorients your attention, You try to bring your mind back, or else focus on the area which moved and see if there was any tension released or any tightness, and just extend that even more. And just allow your body to express itself. When I was practicing in Asia, there were times when there were some unusual movements that meditators did, and the sayadaw would just allow that. You know, some people would lift their arms up and put their arms out to both sides. Who knows, they might have been a bird in another life, and they were just spreading their wings again. And we have to be careful not to judge and not to try to force. Otherwise, this is not a natural evolution of the body and mind connection. Where through our opinion of what's right and what's not right, we may miss something that's being revealed to us, that's a piece of information coming through that we need to acknowledge and investigate. I hope I haven't said anything that would offend anyone, but I never really thought about that too much. Oh, any other questions? Yes. That's so true.
So with meditation, it's like I just sort of have trouble bringing myself to do it, even though when I do it often, I feel the benefits from it, but I just can't.
Okay, Ken. All right. Do you know there's also things like salad dressing? And so it would be helpful to know what your meditation object is. Like, what do you focus on?
I usually just do breath, focusing on my breath.
Is that the only meditation? There are so many other styles of meditation, and you might like to try different techniques and see if something else is more comfortable for you.
It's quite comfortable. I do really enjoy it.
Oh, good. Oh, I see. Okay, I misunderstood. Resistance, right? That's quite common. When you, if you really notice the results and you really value them, then you may change your opinion. And you know, how long have you been practicing? Right. Do you practice often?
Off and on.
Off and on. Okay. It's just like people that go to the gym off and on. They know it's good for them, and then every time they stop doing it and go back, they have to start all over. So you get sore muscles, and you go home and you ache, and then you don't want to go back the next day. But if you do it continuously, you don't have to go through that period of initiation again. So the benefits accumulate, or the cumulative effect is much more noticeable, and then there wouldn't be this resistance coming up. It's very easy for life to interfere. We all experience that, even in the monastery. I've just got to finish this project, and then I'll be able to sit if it's finished. But it's never finished. So we have to make important choices. Our attachments, we all have this kind of imbalance of how to devote time to what is most important. And then as we get older, and as we get less able to to sit easily. We realized we have less time left. The urgency develops. If you suffer more, the urgency develops. Whenever there's a full moon, more people come to the monastery. Whenever some tragedy happens, people come running for, they want to sit more, they want to practice more, they want to hear more of the teachings, because things aren't just going the way we want them to. So we feel the urgency. And you might consider that. Just review your life and see, what are you doing? What would you like? What results would you like for your life? And then the salad becomes delicious. You don't even need dressing. But I was going to try to offer some dressing for you. Did you have a question? Carol.
During meditation, you invited us to connect with the earth element and the air element. Could you mind expanding on the elements?
Not at all.
And how technically how to think about balance.
Balancing the elements? Okay. Okay. I'm balancing. So the most prominent earth element is, of course, the body itself. And if we want to be aware of the body, we just have to bring our attention to the way the body is sitting and the feelings, the sensations in the body, and how the body is supported as an element of earth. The earth element is connected to the extension of the body, the pushing up, support for the body, the feeling of heaviness, solidity, density, hardness, softness. That's how I experience the body, experience the bony mass of the body, the teeth, the skin, hair on your head. This is the physicality of the body. And you experience the materiality on which the body sits, like the floor, the chair. This is a very easy one to experience, right? Now, one thing before I go any further for you to remember is that the body and the air element, the wind element, the fire element, or temperature, coldness, heat, and the water element, the fluids in the body, saliva, sweat, tears, urine, blood. These all know. We don't have to think them into balance. They're construed and they're conglomerated together in a quite beautiful balance without our intervention. But usually we, through our energetic interventions, some of them skillful and some of them not, we go out of balance. That's why exercise and non-abuse of the body and of the elements is very good for our health. In terms of mental health, there's the mind element, which is something that we usually don't consider. And the mind element also has a balance and very easily goes out of balance. So the earth element, water element, fire element, air element is about the physicality. The air is breath, is the air element, the wind element entering. This is entering and fading away again, in-breath, out-breath. This is how we stay alive. And this is also a dynamic form of contemplation, because the wind element is not just, we're not contemplating the wind outside of ourselves, we're contemplating the relationship between the wind element external to us and entering into us. And if we read in the Anapanasati Sutta, the Buddha gives instructions about contemplating the elements externally and internally. So the body reflects, the processes within reflect the processes external to us as well. So like water is the flowing and that which draws things together and which connects things together. However, there are elements of the body that are earth, which are like the connective tissues that connects different organs together. The air element works in the body by entering through these nasal flutes, which are earth element. So they're so in balance. They're just the little pockets of tubes of earth that surround the air element and draw in just enough breath to fill up this cavity in the lungs through which we breathe, and then spread the, you know, through the blood, that oxygen, and it through the pumping of the heart, which is partly wind element, partly water element, partly earth element, partly the fire, the heat, the coolness. It's an incredible balance. We don't have to intervene. It all knows what to do. But when it comes to the mind element, we're pretty confused. And that's where we have to do the work. So what's so amazing about the Buddha's instructions is that he suggests that we contemplate these elements that are of materiality and where the experience of which reflects the external world, but which is represented internally in our own bodies. If we pay attention to those and understand them in their ultimate form, that means in their raw experience, then the image or the reflex image of elemental understanding, or I should put it the other way, understanding of the elements, gives us the knowledge we need to develop quiet in the mind. Now how amazing is that? Just by meditating, by balancing in the boat of the breath, which is the air element, or the wind, entering through these earth tubes into this vortex of balanced and element activities that keep us alive, the mind begins to experience its ultimate and true nature. Consciousness begins to know itself. This is the most stunning discovery. And the Buddha offers us instructions on how to do that and how to realize a depth of inner radiance and joy that is unparalleled in external experience through the sense media. So, I wanted to read some gems to you, and then maybe I'll reflect on what is. Are there any other questions, or do you want to hear a little? Okay. I don't know which one to read first. Okay. Following on from what I just spoke about, these are quotes that are based on the Buddha's teachings, and they're taken from a book that Ajahn Jayasoro compiled, and I think he's putting a lot of these teachings into his own words, and he has a tremendous gift I'd like to share with you. To lead the mind to peace, we must learn all about that, about all that makes it unquiet. I'll read that again. To lead the mind to peace, we must learn about all that makes it unquiet. So, before we can be peaceful, we have to study our condition and see how unpeaceful we are and how that unpeace is experienced, how we feel it, how it arises within our own body, the jerking, the tension, the painful feelings or emotions, how the disquiet feels viscerally. How do we feel it? We just pay attention to the body. We pay attention to the breath. By paying attention to the breath, the mind becomes more and more quiet. And when I say mind, I'm really not referring to the brain. I'm referring to the core, which is in the heart area. It's not an organ. It's the knowing faculty of consciousness that becomes more and more quiet, more and more clear and still. And from that stillness, we can see better within. We have a more microscopic and telescopic, I don't know which scopic, but it's the most all-powerful view into our own being. We begin to study the core of what we are and what we experience. And through that, we develop understanding of our suffering, understanding of our painful condition. And we begin to also experience its impersonal nature, that there actually isn't a solid being, a solid person that we thought we were, that is stuck with this kind of suffering. And this is most magnificent discovery, to realize the impersonality of this process. And then by discovering the unsatisfactoriness and the impersonality or non-meanness of it, we also see how not to cling to it. We see the emptiness of it, like there is really nothing that we need to carry or hang on to. And so we also see, because it's impermanent and it isn't going to last, and this for many people is the most obvious thing of all, and we just have to watch our body over the years. And the years seem to go by faster and faster the longer we have these bodies. The older we get, the more we know about this impermanence. But if we watch the admix of elements within the body, we see their movement, and there isn't a single thing in there that is actually static. It's all process. And you can notice that from the raw movement of the mind, moment by moment, through the restless tides of thought. How difficult is that to control? So, who's in charge? And who owns it all? Actually, no one. But this isn't something we should believe. It's something we need to investigate, penetrate, study, and realize. So when the mind becomes more and more clear and we study the elements and then they're reflected in the space of consciousness, the knowing mind, then we see the impermanence of this whole show. Just like the breath doesn't stop until it stops. And when it stops, the body is finished. So the whole thing is just arising and fading away, a cycle of breath and sustaining for a while and then a fading away, a death. And there's nothing to fear in that, except that fear itself frightens us. There's nothing frightening about this disappearance of phenomena arising and ceasing. And this is something we can realize in our own heart in such a way that instead of being bringing fear or creating fear, it can bring us joy, the joy of just realizing that this is the truth of the whole universe. Everything in this universe is moving in the same way, the same process. From the tiniest insect to the stars. Stars also are born and die. They're born, they last for how many eons, and then they die. And the light that we receive from stars has been traveling for such a long time, some of those stars don't even exist anymore. But the light is still coming. We contemplate this. This is powerful contemplation. The thing that we should fear the most is that we don't die to greed, we don't die to anger, we don't die to delusion. We keep ourselves ignorant by not paying attention. We ignore the reality of what we are. So we sustain our ignorance. We sustain our greed by running after that which is false and does not give us true happiness and peace. And we support conditions in our minds which are violent, aggressive, agitated, joyless. They make us ill. And they are called ill will. And they are an ill wind. So the condition of the mind is really quite serious. It needs to be considered much more than the condition of these elements. So, to lead the mind to peace, we must learn about all that makes it unquiet. We must learn how to prevent those things from arising and how to deal with them if they do. So that's the project for this life, and it's enormous. Therefore, my friend there, who you said that you come back to your meditation from time to time, this is probably the most important thing you can be doing. That's just my opinion, but I think you can check it out and test it. And if you do it more and more, you'll begin to see more clearly why. Because the quiet that we seek is not to be found in our worldly activities. that's to be found within us. So I want to thank you for sharing tonight. If there are any other questions or anyone? Carol?
There were more gems, were there not?
Oh, there were more. Do you want me to give them all today? I'll have nothing left for tomorrow. Then how long do you have this hall? Another few. Nine, okay. If any of you need to leave, please go ahead. Don't be shy. What happened to the, you were coughing. Are you all right?
Yeah.
No, don't worry. It's compassion, you know. The element's a little bit out of balance. And we all cough at different times. All, yes, all beings hate to suffer, love to feel good. Just as we do, knowing this, the wise person harms no creature, but offers them safety and kindness. All, yes, all beings hate to suffer, love to feel good, just as we do. Knowing this, the wise person harms no creature, but offers them safety and kindness. First, you know, just like when you get on an airplane and they tell you to put the oxygen mask on your own face before you, in case, before you put it on the child. Then we have to offer ourselves kindness and safety first. How do we offer ourselves safety and kindness before we try to give it to others? We have to find the cause of the disquiet within us before we can give ourselves that quiet. It's the same. It's really the same. Before we can lead others to peace or lead ourselves to peace, we have to find the origin of the disquiet. So having seen the five obstacles to peace in the mind, the greed, the ill will, greed or desire for things, experiences pleasant, avoiding unpleasant experiences, unpleasant pain, unpleasant sensation, restlessness, agitation, which are a kind of minor form of greed, because we still want something but we don't know what it is until we get it. We're just kind of jumping from one thing to the next. And the dullness, which this kind of lethargy, I can't do much, kind of mild or disguised or unacknowledged depression. It's just too tired, too exhausted to do anything or to pay attention or to see. So what it manifests as a the word in the scriptures or in the translations is torpor. Torpor is a very colorful word. And sometimes we're just so tired of running around doing what we're supposed to be doing because of our many duties and responsibilities. So the physical the elements, they are out of balance and we're tired. But the mental tiredness is another tiredness. It's just an exhaustion because we're not really connecting to that inner core. from which the truth can be seen and faced and experienced, that which really gives us life. We're disconnecting from it. And then doubt is a way of not trusting, not surrendering to the work, the commitment to work, the responsibility to ourselves to do the work that will lead us in a direction of mental health, mental peace, mental well-being. So these five things must be seen within the mind, known, recognized. Like, if you know that there's someone in your life that is unkind to you, and you want to free yourself from that unkindness, it's important that we're able to recognize what unkindness looks like in here. What does it dress up as? When we hate ourselves or when we judge ourselves, we have opinions about ourselves, we can sometimes dress it up or put the volume down so low that it's just a kind of whining little voice. There you go again. You don't even hear it. You keep saying it to yourself again and ah. You know, four-letter word with ah. Did it again. Darn, or whatever you said. not like knitting, but it did it again. This is disabling. We become crippled by even that. Where's the kindness? Where's the compassion? We want the compassion from outside, but we're even to ourselves, we're not able to give it. So that voice can be heard by those who would listen for it and use it. Because we're so deluded, we will use the negativities and the unwholesome forces to gain power over others. It's a way of exploiting each other. And then we become dependent. We get into codependent or I would say malfunctioning relationships that are, again, it's a doubling of disability. We become crippled together. But that's, what kind of togetherness is that? What kind of relationship is it? But if our awareness is powerful and we're able to stay attentive to the inner processes and how the mind goes to those disabling voices and bows down to them, then little by little we discover the origin of the disquiet and we can lead ourselves to safety and kindness. We've got to become really quiet and listen in subtle, subtle ways, the way this practice helps us to listen from within to all the internal elements. We listen from within, and then we start to see where our suffering is arising, not by analyzing it or thinking about it, but by experiencing and feeling the result of that in us, in our bodies. We pay such close attention. We become like the most finely tuned instrument. So when the instrument gets more and more finely tuned, what happens? Beautiful music. Yeah. And then if we start to play a beautiful harmony within, then the beings around us begin to wonder, like really become, it stops their unwholesome and out of tune imbalance of elements, and their hearts begin to resonate with that, and they stop because their disability is being turned down, tuned down, and instead it's like turning off a discordant piece of music or machine, you know, or turning off a computer that doesn't work anymore. You just turn it off, and instead it begins to harmonize with the concord or the harmony or the in-tune resonance coming from our elemental frequency. And this is why the Buddha says, asevana cha balanam pandita cha sevana. Pandita nancha means with the wise, those that have wisdom, those that are resonating with the truth, keep their company, stay away from foolish people. Then we be, why? Because when we have wise friendship, we learn how to be wise. And when we are kind to ourselves, we learn how to be kind. And then we can spread that. When we practice the breath concentration and we learn how to focus our energy and we introduce a loving feeling into that, we can spread that. So whatever blessing we introduce, whatever quiet we introduce into our own body-mind experience, other people experience it too. If you look at flowers, then you will smile. And if you look at detritus, the garbage, then you feel the unpleasant smell and the disorder and the sadness of waste. Waste products is not a beautiful sight. So our minds are full of things to be discarded. And going inward and purifying is a way of discarding what we really need to let go of. And so then we die to the greed, we die to the hatred, we die to the delusion, we purify it. It's a process, it takes at least a lifetime and much more. But therefore we should begin now and be prudent and diligent about it, because it serves not only us but everyone. So all, yes, all beings hate to suffer, love to feel good, just as we do. Knowing this, the wise person harms no creature, but offers them safety and kindness, and we hasten to do this for ourselves so that we can bless the world. I think this one I'll just read and let you reflect on it on your own when you walk out the door and look at those magnificent trees and flowers out there in beautiful Victoria, BC. It's my first time here. Separated. Separated. What does that word bring up? Separated, all arid, and all inside. Separated, all arid inside, all parched. They call it a broken heart. But it is not broken, really. And it's no dry desert. Not indulging in sorrow, not fighting with sorrow, sorrow unfed fades away. I'll read it again. Separated, all arid inside, all parched. They call it a broken heart. But it's not broken, really. Not really. And it is no dry desert. Not indulging in sorrow. Not fighting with sorrow. Sorrow unfed fades away. Thank you so much for listening.